for tuning in, everyone. Welcome to the Odyssey Podcast. Today we are here with Jessica Geddes, the art librarian at Mesa County Libraries.
Hello.
As well as Emmy Ferris.
Hi.
Hi, Emmy, a regular on the podcast.
Semi-regular.
And Evan Curtis, he is going to be the artist in residence for this fall of 2020. So Jessica's going to talk us through the artist in residence program, a little bit how that's changed with COVID, and then the application process for next term, basically, if anybody is interested. And then we'll have Evan walk us through a little bit about his history and his art and what he's going to offer. So we'll start with you, Jess.
Yeah, good. Sounds good. Thank you. So, yeah, I want to talk a little bit about our artist in residence program this year for 2020. As everyone knows, we had to do a ton of cancellations this summer. That includes canceling our artist that we had scheduled for our summer block. Her name is Rebecca Woods. She has graciously accepted the first block of artist in residence time for January 2021, which is great. So we can actually get her rescheduled. And so that kind of puts our application process for the 2021 artist in residence program. We are able to move that back to December rather than having it open this summer, which is going to be great, which means it'll be a little bit closer for the artists who apply. It'll be a closer timeline for them. They don't necessarily have to wait a whole year before they can get in here. So what we are looking at right now, December 28th is when our call for artists will get sent out. We'll make that live. The application will be on our website. And then we'll have all of those applications in by February 8th. So folks can take 6 weeks to apply for this. Like I said, it'll be right on our website. And then we'll have that spring block and the fall block open. Always feel free to email me. I think my email address is on that web form. So anybody has any questions, I'm always available to answer them.
And for the programs, how are those going to be offered? Is it going to be a hybrid of in-person and virtual, or just straight virtual?
Well, for next year, we can't really plan that far yet because we just don't know. But we are thinking it'd be great to keep the combination of virtual programs and in-person programs for as long as we can do that, because I think it's important to put that stuff out online and just see who can respond to it that way rather than being in person here at the library. So hopefully we could do a hybrid. And I know for Evan's programs this fall, we're going to do a combination of in-person and virtual programs for that as well.
So if you're interested in those, check out our event calendar on our website for all the details, including registration, which I'm sure will be required for most, if not all of them.
Definitely.
And for people that aren't familiar with our Artist in Residence program, can you just give a quick little overview of what it is?
Absolutely. So about 5 years ago, we started the Artist in Residence program here at Mesa County Libraries. The goal behind it is to, we really want to support our local artists, and we want to support that art culture in our community because we do have a very rich arts culture here, whether or not people realize it. So we definitely want to connect our community with these artists who are working so hard to get their artwork and their skills and their knowledge out into our community. So that's a big deal for us. So what we do is we have an application process. We accept those applications for, 6 to 8 weeks, and then our art committee goes through them. We narrow it down. We interview each artist. And then, we make our selections based on, what we think our community could benefit from. And then we schedule those artists that we select for about, I think it's a 14-week time frame. And each of the three artists will get that 14-week time frame. They can share their skills, their knowledge with our community through programs, hopefully virtual and in-person programs. They also have open studio hours, which means people can come in and meet with them, talk with them, see a little bit about their art process. Or just come in and say hi and see what they're working on. It doesn't have to be anything formal. But yeah, we hope to continue this. We hope to make it a little bit stronger and more meaningful in the future, and we're just plugging away at it.
You're doing a very great job.
Oh, thanks.
I must say. And you're obviously a part of the committee that chose Evan mm-hmm. for this residency. So what really drew you to him?
I think what we all appreciated about Evan, he's our first artist, I think, who has been a stop motion animation artist. And so that is very exciting because I know we have a community here who would appreciate that. And I think it's something that it's definitely an art form that people can appreciate whether or not they realize they're appreciating it, because it's just one of those things that you see and you don't understand how much work goes into it. And once people can see all the work and all the creativity that goes into it, I mean, it's just so rich and in-depth, and I think people would really appreciate that. So we were really excited about that. And, you know, Evan has won some awards for his work. He's a professor. You know, he works very hard. He puts out a great product, a great end product, very detail-oriented. So all of those things are really important, and I think that they will come through in his programs for people to see.
I'm very excited to hear more about your passions, Evan. So, like Jess mentioned, you are a professor at CMU, and you teach animation and film. Has teaching always been a passion of yours, or did that evolve as you got more into your art?
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me here.
Of course.
I didn't think teaching from a young age was going to be my career, but I think having grown up with stop motion influences from mostly Eastern Europe, where these artists were coming up in communist systems where the arts was supported by the government, I was under the impression that, like, oh yeah, short filmmaking, you can just live off from that. And then I realized that in this era and society in America, capitalist society, it's a lot harder to make a living off from short films unless you're doing commercials or music videos. And so I early on realized teaching is going to be a great way to support what I want to do that allows me to continue making a lot of personal films where I don't have to do commercials and I can be highly selective with freelance projects. And I think the other side to that is that sometimes there's a lot of pressure to perform to someone else's standard when doing freelance. So every time I take on a music video or a freelance project, I'm excited. And then as soon as they say, okay, you got it, I'm like, oh, what did I just get myself into? And then, of course, the self-doubt starts to come up and you're like, are they going to be impressed and happy with it? Whereas when I make my own films, I might be unhappy, but eventually I'll come around and say, oh yeah, this is really great. This is what I intended to do and it's mine. So whatever mistakes or flaws are in it, that's part of me and I embrace that. So teaching, I did know fairly early on, I'd say maybe in high school is when I realized, like, oh yeah, I should gear myself towards a teaching career in order to support the stop motion aspect of it.
Okay. And for those who may not be familiar, what does stop motion consist of?
Yeah, stop motion animation, the most basic form is taking a picture of an object, moving the object very slightly, taking another picture. So you're moving objects in very small increments and then taking multiple photos, and you put those all together in an editing program and it plays like any normal film that you would see. So it sounds really simple and basic, but doing those pictures, doing those small movements, like any form of animation, can take hours for just a second. Generally, you know, with film, we say 24 frames per second. That was the classic film rate. Of course, everything is slightly different because you're not actually shooting frames anymore. It's all digital. But even our phones, most cameras still use the old frame rates. And so if you're taking 24 pictures for 1 second, You can imagine that that takes a very long time to finish even a 5-minute film.
And I want to talk about something. Jess sent me your bio, and it says that you were able to intern at Blue Sky Studios, and you worked on Horton Hears a Who and Ice Age 3,
yeah.
Which just like the little kid in me is so excited about that. Did you find that you enjoyed working on those mass scale projects, or that you enjoy more of your independent work that you're doing?
Oh, it's tough. You know, I think at the time, I did those internships because I was lucky that Blue Sky Studios was right down the road from where I was doing my BFA in film in New York. And when I interned at Adult Swim during my MFA, again, it was like a mile away from where I was living when I was in Atlanta. So it wasn't like I had to move to a different state just to do that. They were there. So I feel very lucky because in both cases, it was almost accidental. But I loved getting to experience feature animation and TV animation at these major studios. It did help me. One of the more important aspects of internships is it also teaches you what you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at a young age, I was still into that whole romantic notion of, oh, I want to just keep working by myself and do personal films. So the idea of being at a huge studio with hundreds of people where I don't want to say that the artists are expendable, but to some extent that movie was still going to be a success with or without me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of felt like, do I really want to just be a cog in the wheel for someone else's project? And my philosophy now is, you know, if I'm going, not that Horton Hears a Who or those projects are bad movies, but what I normally tell myself is, If I'm going to work on someone else's bad idea, it might as well be my own bad idea. because it is a lot of time, especially with those major productions. Some of those artists will spend 2 to 5 years on a single film, and that's their life. So sometimes I look at that and I say, okay, if I had followed that path, would my personal filmography be a lot less? Would I have a lot less to show for it? And yes, my name would be in the credits of these major films, but it wouldn't be an Evan Curtis film. It wouldn't have my personality in it. It would just be like, yeah, I animated the foot of that character for 2 minutes out of a 90-minute film or something. But now that I'm older, there have been so many amazing things. And of course, I love all cinema, and I recognize the sacrifice that all of these artists make to work on other people's films. I'm really glad that there are people who are willing to do that so that we can have amazing films like WALL-E or Into the Spider-Verse. Like that's nearly impossible to make with just one person. So I'm really grateful that there are people who are like, no, we're better together, so mm-hmm. we can make this project that we couldn't do on our own. So as I get older, I sometimes think, oh, should I have stuck with that? Like, you know, I kind of miss being in that team environment where you're able to use other people's skills to create something that you could never do on your own.
Yeah. And looking again at the bio just sent, it says that you are really interested in proposing or presenting, I'm sorry, a theme about the idea of home and how it relates to our place. How did that really manifest within your work?
So early on, I think, you know, again, going back to being influenced by other Eastern European filmmakers who were making very personal films as opposed to mainstream projects, and I thought, oh, okay, yes, I should do personal work as well. And part of doing personal work is making yourself vulnerable and putting a lot of yourself in the project. And the home became a major aspect because, like most kids growing up in rural mountain towns, I grew up in upstate New York in the Adirondacks. Everybody jokes with their friends like, oh, this town is awful. I can't wait to get out of here. I don't want to be like my parents and spend my whole life in the same zip code. And so I've been fortunate to have lived in multiple states, but at the same time, I'm now starting to recognize, you know, I may have ridiculed my parents for never getting out of that town, but then I realize they have roots somewhere, and they know the town, and their friendships are 30 years old, and they went to kindergarten with their friends that they're still friends with. Whereas every time I move, you end up making new friends, and now you're kind of resetting your roots. So there's I can see the benefit and the freedom. When I was younger, especially with films like Chief Sarenby that were about this freedom of, you know, seeing these cities on the horizon and knowing like, yeah, I don't have anything holding me to that city. There's nothing holding me down. I can go anywhere. But now I also see, oh, but maybe that would also be nice to have roots somewhere, to feel like you belong. So the home has been a pretty big theme in a lot of my early work, Chief Sarenby, Snowdisius, Scrivener, those early films. I'm slowly, even Saturn Return from a few years ago was also about just like finding a home, establishing home. And now I'm getting to the point where, okay, how about not making so much personal stuff and now branch out and just try these other forms where not everything has to be about the home. And that's been great too, because it's allowed me to just explore other avenues. And I feel like I've made enough films about myself. And even though these newer films, I'm picking stories that still feel like they resonate with me and I can relate to and identify with certain themes in them. So it still feels personal, but it's not necessarily what my other films are saying too.
Right. It looks like you have a big background in the environment in terms of being a trail crew leader for the Montana Conservation Corps. Do you find that the wilderness, the environment, also shows up in your work?
Yes. So when I first started filming on location, it was before I went to film school. I didn't know the rules that you're not supposed to do that. And so as a kid, it's like, well, this is what I want to do. I have it in my backyard, or I have this at my disposal, so I'm going to film there. Every animation book is going to say you can't film outside because you have to control everything. And from my perspective, and as a teacher, I tell this to my students that whenever anyone tells you you can't do something, or if a book says you can't do something, do the opposite and prove them wrong. And that was kind of my goal. So I've made a music video, a stop motion music video that I shot entirely without using a tripod. So it's kind of shaky. And of course, the story that I used, and it works because it's a music video, that the shaky camera works fine. But that's all because I read a book that was like, you have to use a tripod. And I said, no, I don't. I'll show you. I'll prove it. And so I did a film without using a tripod. And then I really like shooting on location because it reminds me a lot of live action filmmaking, which my BFA is in live action filmmaking. So it just reminds me of that, where you're letting go of control. You know, this idea that we have complete control over something is ridiculous. And so I like letting go of that control. I also started doing that because it saves a lot of time and money. I don't have the space or the resources to build a desert in my house or my basement, or to build an ocean and animate that. So I'll just go to the ocean and work with it. And over time, it's sort of unintentionally developed my aesthetic in a way. But now I know how to take advantage of shooting outside and getting what I want. And I think that's what gives some of my work some really interesting visuals. Taking these inorganic characters and miniatures out to a location that we all recognize and have been in, and now we're seeing it from a different perspective because there's something that is not natural and shouldn't be alive now coming to life in this environment. To me, it's no different than being a kid and playing with your toys in the backyard. That's really what it is, and now I can share that on screen with everybody.
I love that. And I'm very excited to see some of the programs that you're going to offer. What types of programs are you going to offer for our artists in residence?
Yeah, so the first one will just be a basic stop motion animation to get anyone involved. Stop motion, I feel like, is easier to teach than other forms of animation because it doesn't rely on software. It's really just if you've got a camera and objects, if it exists, if it's a material, it can be animated. Everything in this room can be animated in stop motion. So it's the perfect medium for kids and really anyone who wants to play with toys or objects. And you see stop motion is definitely gaining popularity in YouTube with younger kids, specifically in like the Lego realm. That's incredibly popular to animate Legos or action figures. So that'll be one of the first programs. It's just how to do stop motion. And then you can shoot on location or shoot outside or shoot anywhere you would like to. One of the other programs is going to be on sound design. I do all of the sound design for my films. I really love doing Foley work, recording sound effects, and then editing them in. I feel like with a lot of my work, the visuals are strong, they're beautiful, I'm proud of them, but where the world really comes to life in my films is through the sound. I think you can watch them with the sound off and it'll probably be interesting, but what really makes these unnatural characters feel like they're in our world is hearing their footstep. So when I'm filming up on the mesa with my current film, there is no sound in animation. It's not like live action where you get to pick up sounds while you're shooting. So everything has to be accounted for and recorded and put in there. And I think when you've got these characters that have footsteps or a fire that crackles or you hear water pouring out of a sink, it just really gives life, more depth to that world.
Well, and I think for a lot of audiences, they need to be able to, using your five senses, accept something that is familiar to them in order to enter into the story. So going back to what you said about including actual location footage in your films, like the minute they recognize like, oh, that's, I've been to that ocean or I've been on that mountain, then they can introduce themselves into the story and feel vulnerable to accept it. And sound is such a powerful thing to use to be able to invite them in.
Yeah. And with sound, I also use it to hide some of my own weaknesses. So I know what my limitations and what my weaknesses are when it comes to an animator or a director. And so I'm able to use sound to sometimes cover those up or smooth them out and hide them because what you're hearing and what you're seeing doesn't always have to match up. So I can use that to my advantage to, you know, I don't think of it as, oh, I'm going to manipulate the audience right now. But I think of it in terms of how can I use this sound effect to help this transition, this visual transition feel smoother or something like that.
We are very excited to have you on as our artist in residence this fall. Thank you so much, Evan, for coming. And yes, Jessica.
I just want to say that Evan's going to be here. The first day of his residency will be August 24th, and he'll be with us through November 30th. His programs in person will be offered in September, and then the virtual programs of these will be offered in October and November. So Evan should have open studio hours if we're able to hold them. I think we decided that what would work best for his schedule is going to be Thursdays from 4 to 6 p.m., and that'll just be here in the 970 West studio in the artist and residence room.
Come down, hang out with Evan, see what he's working on, ask him questions.
If people want to check out your films, where can they go to watch those?
They can go to evancurtis.com or magifilms.com. It's both the same website, but sometimes or magi is hard to spell, looks like origami. So I also have evancurtis.com. They're on YouTube and Vimeo. Most of them are kid-friendly, PG. There are a couple that should have mature notifications on there you shouldn't be watching them with your kids. but there's really only maybe two of those deep into the forbidden zone and one called Birth, which has a little bit of nudity in it, but everything else is pretty kid-friendly.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Like I said, we're very excited to have you on and see all your work that you're going to do.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we're here with Diana, our youth services librarian. Hi, Diana.
Hi, everybody.
And we're also here with Andrea, our teen services coordinator. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Doing well.
And of course, we're here with Emmy, our not so occasional guest.
It's like 75% of the time I'm here.
Thanks for joining.
Of course.
We're going to be talking today about some new or modified services that we're going to be offering for our youth and teens this fall. So we'll start with Diana.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me, everybody. So I wanted to talk about some changes with Storytime. We've been doing Storytime for a while on Facebook, but now we're going to continue to do that. But we're also going to be offering some Storytimes through Zoom. And we are going to be doing that because we want to offer something that's a little more hands-on and interactive for families. So you can chat and kind of just feel like you're more involved with the Storytime, kind of like in our real, you know, our real in-person story times that we had previously. So we're going to be offering story times on Tuesdays in the afternoon this time. The Facebook version will be at 1:30, and then the Zoom version will be at 2 o'clock. And then we're also going to offer our bilingual story time on Wednesdays. The first will be on Facebook at 9:30, and then it will be followed by the same story time and the same bilingual story time at 10 o'clock. And then Thursday, we are going to be offering a story time in the morning at 9:30 on Facebook and then at 10 o'clock on Zoom. So we have all kinds of choices. We're trying to allow more folks to chime in and watch what we're doing that way.
And you're also going to have a puppet show here in September.
Yes, we're really excited. Of course, puppet shows are huge in our county. So we want to continue to do puppet shows, and we're going to be posting that in September, and it's all going to be about a library sign-up. So it's going to be pretty fun, pretty cute puppet show.
Nice. And a very popular service that you've been offering this summer is Take and Make Kits. We're going to continue that through the fall. Can you give us an idea of a couple?
Yeah, those have been so popular, and we're really excited that people are enjoying those. They are flying out of the door. So this is something to really you know, watch for if you really want to get involved with these and take them home and do them with your child. So this fall, we've got tangrams, and those are going to be, they're basically just like little kits of the seven shapes that you can design different objects and do storytelling with, which is really fun. We're also going to do a tissue paper dyeing craft kit with all the supplies included. And then in September, we're going to do some abstract foil art and have all the supplies for kids to do that. And then we're also going to learn how to finger knit a bookmark. So those should be fun. And then, of course, we're going to have other things in October and November. So stay tuned for those. Yeah, so it's going to be really fun.
That's awesome. Regarding the tissue paper one, yes. I actually had a patron ask me the other day where you buy that tissue paper.
Oh.
Because she bought some at the store. She did the Take and Make kit with her son, and they enjoyed it so much they wanted to do it again.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they went to the store and bought tissue paper, and it didn't work. So she was asking me where it was from, and I was like, oh, I don't actually
know. So that's funny that you mentioned that, because Andrea did this program with the teens in August, and she was the one that tipped me off that you actually need a specific type of tissue paper. It's bleeding tissue paper.
Okay. It sounds so metal.
And exactly. It's a little bit surprising that they don't have tissue paper, just regular tissue paper that would work. You have to have this special kind.
Huh.
So we found it on Amazon. I don't know if it's offered in other locations like Michael's or other craft stores. That's something I haven't really looked into, but it is kind of bizarre that just regular tissue paper doesn't work for that craft.
That is bizarre.
Yeah. I remember like hearing, because this is a craft that's been around for a little while, like families have been doing it. And it's fun just if you guys get the chance, you know, looking online at different ways to do bleeding tissue paper is fun. But yeah, apparently old tissue paper, like you could get really cheap tissue paper. And that stuff would bleed and the dye would get everywhere. And I think people complained about it. Like, there were, like, enough kindergarten teachers who were like, the children's hands are stained every color of the rainbow. This is not what we were going for. So I think they changed the formulas over the years. Yeah, it's just really interesting how things happen like that. Like, a craft that used to work doesn't anymore. Yeah. You have to now buy this specialized thing when before it was like, this is the cheap version that does stain your hands.
The tissue paper is too nice now these days.
Too fancy.
Well, we're washing our hands multiple times a day now, so they should just bring it back.
That's
really
true.
Because if it's stained, it's stained.
Yeah. So one thing I forgot to mention, and this is kind of huge, actually. I can't believe I didn't mention it after the story time commentary, but we are going to be offering storytime kits for families to pick up at the library sometime probably late August, early September. We're not exactly sure when we're going to have them all made up, but we're making quite a few for families, and they're going to be something that you can use along with your story time. They're kind of like supplements. So what I mean by that is we're going to have bags with shakers, bubbles. We've got scarves in there. So you can use them while the storytime facilitator is using that toy, that manipulative. But then also, in addition to that, we're going to include bilingual sheets. So we're going to have in English and Spanish, songs, rhymes. We're also going to have stories that you can tell outside of story time. So you can use these whenever you want to, whenever you're feeling like, okay, my child needs something to do. Let's play with bubbles and hear this fun story or whatever to go along with it. And then the other thing that's really great is that we're going to include alphabet flashcards in English and in Spanish. So, you know, you can kind of use that to enforce some of those early literacy skills along with the playing. I know that's another skill that we enforce a lot here at the library. So those are awesome. Stay tuned for those because those are going to be really fun, I think.
Just also to mention that these are, of course, free. So
these are free, and they can be picked up at all of our library locations. Mm-hmm. You can even pick them up at curbside if that's how you prefer to pick up items. So,
yeah,
they're going to be really cool, I think. So
when you call to schedule your appointment, you can, for curbside, you can ask for a Take and Make kit, and we'll make sure to get those for you if you're not comfortable
coming
in.
Yeah, Take and Make, and you can ask for story time kits. Like I said, probably towards the end of August or early September, we'll have those. And it's, of course, like the Take and Make kits, it's while supplies last. So try to get on that early once you hear that they're out. I'm sure that we'll be promoting them.
Of course we will. Well, and something that I love that the Youth Services Department does is we make kits that, yes, obviously have very nice and personalized thing, but we also can offer substitutions for, like, in-house. Like, so a lot of the Kids Club videos that Diana put together earlier when we were in quarantine was like, okay, here's what we have here, but here's some substitutions that can still convey the same, you know, skill-building exercises that you're wanting to accomplish. So, if, you know, we're giving away shakers, maybe somebody's got a plastic Easter egg that they can put some dried pinto beans in, and it still serves the same function. So, your guys' department always does a phenomenal job of offering up substitutions. So, if kits run out, we can offer suggestions
as well. That's a great idea and a really good point, because a lot of these things you could come up with at home. Like, okay, I don't have a scarf at home, but maybe I have a piece of cloth that would basically be the same function, you know?
Well, and it just, like, it allows you to be more creative inside your house and reimagine something for a different purpose than what it normally serves. So obviously, we're all excited that we can offer that as a service to our community, but we also know our community is very resourceful. So if they see something, they can figure out a substitution if we are out. Hopefully we're not.
Hopefully not.
Fingers crossed.
Good point.
I had a question about that, Diana. So are those kits going to be available? Say, for instance, I want to do the Thursday afternoon Zoom story time, and I know that it's going to be about, like, dolphins, and there's a kit that goes along with that. Can I get it before the story time so that I can follow along with it while I'm watching it on Zoom, or is it after?
So I think what we'll do is probably have our first week of story times, which starts August 17th, and we'll probably just announce, like, hey, these kits are going to be available at this time. Cool. So probably the first week of story times, we will not have the kits, but hopefully maybe the second or third week after we kind of get into the groove and we make them up, they'll be available. So
cool.
Yeah. I don't know exactly when, but
it's a little teaser. People have something to look forward to.
Yeah. Awesome. Stay tuned.
Yeah. I love that. I think that sounds like so much fun because the interactivity is so nice. Like, I've been able to do a few virtual programs with teens during quarantine and, you know, since we've been limiting programming. And, you know, I really just enjoy getting to interact with the teens when they come in. You know, I just like hearing about what they're thinking about in their lives. So right. I think that'll be so nice to – I know I've talked to a lot of the people who do story time
right.
who said, like, they just really miss seeing the kids.
Yeah, you know? For sure. I feel that way too. But.
It's a little different to present story time to a group of adults filming you than it is to children.
I don't know. We have a couple of kids here.
Yeah, I do appreciate that our staff will often, like, do the motions to the song that if you're doing story time with them. When you're, like, saying, you know, reach up high, a lot of them will reach up high. It's like, thank you.
Yeah, they do play along. We have a couple of adults that act like kids here on staff in a good way. So.
We need a camera focused on the staff and one on the person giving the story time.
No kidding. That would be actually
really fun, little behind the scenes, like how we do story time. That could be fun.
That could be fun.
I love it.
And also enlightening of how many children we have on staff.
Exactly. Awesome. Yeah, so anyway, lots of good things coming up. For kid programming.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, Andrea, now on to you. So,
oh, great. I'm in the hot seat.
You're used to it, I think, at this point. Mm-hmm. We also have Take and Make kits for teens.
Yeah, we do. So, like you were saying earlier, Bethany, we offered these throughout the summer, and we're going to keep offering these through the fall. Similar to Diana, I'm just going to talk about our August and September ones. There are more later on. It's a lot of information to convey in one podcast episode. So stay tuned.
And everything is on the event calendar. So if people want to look ahead, they can easily go to MasonCountyLibraries.org to see what kits we have to look forward to.
Absolutely. Thank
Shameless
you.
Plug.
Yes. I mean, it is good to look ahead, especially like, Diana was saying, a lot of these take and makes have been very popular. Mm-hmm. So it is good to plan it out a little bit if that's something you're really excited about, or if there's one you're really excited about, you know, try and come in on the first couple days that it's available, because there's been some days where we've had a take and make run out in like 3 days when it's supposed to be offered for 2 weeks, you know.
Oh,
and it's not that we try to under make or anything like that, it's just that one happened to strike a note with people. Anyways, what we are doing is I'm going to be offering our teen take and makes. There's going to be a new one every second and fourth Friday of the month. So just keep an eye out for that. So in August, I'm offering, there's going to be a solar oven that you can make, supplies to make a solar oven. And with that solar oven kit, you can get supplies to make a single s'more. And that's going to be available August 14th through 27th. And then on August 28th through September 10th, I'm offering a friendship bracelet kit. That one is you get like all the supplies you'll need to make a friendship bracelet, but it also comes with a braiding loom. So it's not a traditional friendship bracelet. It's a different kind of method. And so, yeah, it's a very like complex looking braid, but it's super easy, I promise. It's not as scary as it looks. And then September 11th through the 24th, I'm going to be offering a paper beads kit. So cool. Going to have all the supplies to make your own paper beads. They sell those necklaces and things a lot at like, you know, farmers markets and things. So you can learn how to make your own out of supplies you have at home. But we also are going to provide everything you need in that kit to make them at home. And then September 25th through October 8th, there's going to be origami kits. And I'm really excited. Yes. I bought some really fancy looking origami paper. And just because, you know, it's easy to use, you know, the plain paper and stuff. But why not get stuff with like wild patterns on it? You know, why not? There's going to be an origami kit. And there will be instructions of some different things you can make with origami. But I'm sure there are lots of you out there who are way better at it than I am. I still have to learn a lot of the things I'm going to make still. So.
Well, and the great thing about a lot of the awesome kits you guys have put together is we have a ton of library resources. You both of you put together some excellent reading lists to encourage people to go down those rabbit holes. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really amazing all the things that you can make at home with supplies that you have there. Like, I do try and, like, provide a lot of the supplies that I have as like, here's something that you may not ordinarily have at home, but I'm hoping that a lot of people will get inspired, like, oh, I could do this with the supplies, but maybe I could do something a little bit different. And, you know, that's been some of my favorite stuff of seeing like the variations that people do on what they're presented with, because a lot of times people have way better ideas than I do. Once I'm like, here's the materials, they're like, I'm gonna make something amazing. And I'm like, cool. I made it look like the picture.
I think that's all, one of like the underlying, it's like sneaking vegetables into a kid's food. It's like they've got these tools and somewhat of a direction, but then they have the opportunity to play and mm-hmm. make it better. I mean, that's kind of hopefully the goal of civilization is yeah. to keep getting better. But mm-hmm. I got a sneak peek of a couple of the kits you guys put together, and it's really fantastic how a lot of the tools are things you already have at home.
Right?
It's just putting them together to make something awesome and then mm-hmm. teaching kids fun new things.
And we definitely want to see what people are making. So if you're not comfortable coming into the library to show staff, tag us on social media, mm-hmm. send us a direct please. Message on yes, social please. Media. Yeah. We definitely want to see how creative everyone is getting mm-hmm. with
yeah.
these.
Yeah, definitely. See. Yeah, don't feel like you have to like take a picture of your face or anything right. like that, because I know a lot of people are like not comfortable with that. You know, if you just want to send us a picture of like whatever the thing you made was, you know, if nothing else, I'm always just really excited to see what people make. I love, that's one of the things I miss about crafting with people mm-hmm. in person. I loved seeing all the variety and creativity people made, even though sometimes they'd put down what they're making. They're like, well, it's not that unique. And I'm like, that's really different than what I made. And I love it.
In addition to the Take and Make kits, mm-hmm. we also have some programming going on this fall, including the SAT practice mm-hmm. that'll be going on this fall. If people are interested in that, where did they go to sign up?
So you can go to our website, mesacountylibraries.org, and go to our event calendar. We are offering an SAT practice test at the Fruita Community Center on August 22nd from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. It is a registration required event. There's a 10-person limit. And just so you folks know, we are taking your safety very seriously for these in-person events, because this will be, you know, one of the first ones we've done in a while. Masks are going to be required to attend. If you don't have a mask, one will be provided to you. You also, there's going to be physical distancing of mm-hmm. the tables and things that people are going to be taking tests at, because it's over 3 hours to take this test, and so that's a wow. long time to sit in one room. But yeah, it's going to be a timed practice test, trying to replicate test conditions as much as one can imagine, because I honestly don't know what the SAT testing centers are going to be like this fall. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm going to do my best to try and replicate what those conditions may have been like. I have a feeling they're probably going to be pretty similar, since the SAT, last I heard, opted not to offer an online option for the SAT, because I would have to double check to know what if they had changed their mind on that. But the argument was is that there's no way to guarantee when you're taking an over 3 hour test that you are going to have a solid internet connection that whole time. Right. So like from an equity perspective, somebody who maybe has really good internet ends up, you know, doing really good on the test, and then another person who had faulty or bad internet ends up not doing as good for various reasons, and that just doesn't seem fair. So yeah. So but again, that is, I haven't like checked the SAT website today. I would say, yeah, double check if you're in all question about that. But yeah, one of the other fun things we're doing for some limited in-person events for the months of August and September, we're planning on holding our teen readers meetup in person at the library. Again, that is going to be a limited amount of people that we allow to come. It's going to be 10 people. We do prefer that you register ahead of time on mesacountylibraries.org on our event calendar. But if there are spaces available, you know, and somebody came up and wanted to come and there was space, I would just have them sign in. And that's going to be 4 to 5 every Wednesday in August and September. And really, Teen Readers Meetup is just you get together with other teens. You talk about the books that you were reading and enjoy. It could be a book that you loved when you were a kid. It could be a book that you just read yesterday. It's not required that like people read the same thing. And unsurprisingly, we don't always just talk about books, you know. sometimes we'll get into very long rabbit holes about the way that Star Wars movies should have been made and stuff. You know, of course, as you would. I mean, there's a lot, in their defense, there's a lot of Star Wars books, so it ties in.
Well, the last three movies apparently aren't canon anymore, but
what?
We'll save that for 2 years.
That's wild.
Yeah, hot news, guys.
So, Andrea, is the Teen Readers Meetup going to be in the teen room, or is it going to be another location?
That's a great question, yes. We did used to hold Teen Readers Meetup in the teen space. The problem is that to safely physically distance 10 people, 11 including me, that space is not big enough for that, mm-hmm. especially if other people are, wanting to browse books or be on the computers, you know, like people want to in libraries. So instead, we're actually going to be in the classroom, which is downstairs in the library. And so it's going to be in a meeting room in there that is big enough to allow us to safely socially distance. Once again, masks are going to be required for that while you're attending. So yeah, just something to keep in mind. But again, we will provide masks if you don't have one with you. So a couple more things I wanted to mention too is we are going to be doing teen gaming video games on Friday, August 21st from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. Just because that has consistently been one of our most popular teen programs. For sure. It's something that people talk about missing. I know lots of people have been playing video games at home through this whole process, and that's wonderful. I have personally found video games to be a really great outlet during this time, but there's nothing like getting to play with people in person. That's really nice. So again, that's going to be a 10-person limit. Masks are going to be required. People are going to be expected to physically distance if they're not from the same household. Yeah, we do request online registration ahead of time. But again, if there's space and you come, I'm just going to have you sign in and you can come on in. But if there's not space, I'm afraid I have to say, we'll try another time. So it's interesting times. I'm really excited to see how it goes. I hope people come because I think there's just something to be said for in-person programming when it's safe and when it's possible, you know.
And with the exception of the SAT that will be at the Fruita Community Center, most of these will be held here at the Central Library in downtown Grand Junction. So you'll want to check with the branches to see what programs they're offering, how they're offering those. You can always check our website. I'm sure the information will be on there, or give that branch a call. All of the numbers are on our website under the Contact Us tab. And the Take and Make kits are available at branches.
Correct. All the branches will have a Take and Make kit.
Perfect.
Kits. Yes.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for mentioning about branches, because that was I definitely do know that they're offering some teen programming too in August and September, so please do check it out. I know that your branch folk would love to see you, so
yes, sure, they miss everyone just as we all do. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us about the services we're going to be offering this fall. I'm sure we'll have you both back on. So until next time,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.